our first guest today obviously is someone who's known very well in the digital animal community, but also as a huge collector, someone who I think we all respect their opinion, especially when it comes to 3D art and collecting some really top artists, and that's our very own Patty Sash. Patty, welcome. We're glad that you are going to share some of your experience. So I think everybody knows that you had an experience within the last year where you realized, hey, a lot of really great art is somehow missing from your wallet. And I rather than go through the whole, how security works and be careful, because I think we all know that you're someone who's really careful. In fact, you talk about this a lot. I want to start with, how did you figure out that you even had a problem? You have a lot of art. So how did you even know that something was off?
Well, first off, I want to say thanks for having me in this occasion where I talk about an unfortunate situation that hopefully can be remedied in the future. But to answer your question, it's a really simple answer. And you kind of mentioned, the answer itself, where you're saying, I've got so many, where I knew exactly how many NFTs were in my wallet because it said 2.6K. And so I just happened to be on the computer and I glance in my wallet and it says 2.5K. So I'm thinking to myself, the only way that that could have happened was a substantial number of NFTs were moved out of my wallet, and I know that I didn't do it. So then sure enough, I check activity and I saw that, whatever it was, 18 minutes prior, 20 NFTs got moved out of one of my wallets on one clip. And the craziest thing is, it wasn't just one wallet. I had two wallets that got hacked because of my own stupidity of thinking that I did something wrong, not that what I was clicking was something wrong. I can't explain it because it's just so not me. Because I'm always thinking of what I'm. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So let's drill down on that. Because this is to me the most interesting part. So I remember going back to the beginning of this, where you first started tweeting about it, and you started saying something's wrong, right? And over it was like a 4 or 5 day period. You know better, and I want you to tell us this. Like, how did you figure? So I know the beginning part because we've all seen people go through it, right? Where you sort of break out into a cold sweat, and you're like, oh my god, some stuff's leaving my wallet, right? And there's a panic. But walk us through what happened over the next few days where you unraveled what had actually happened, because I think that's the thing where there's a lot of people who say to be safe and there's a lot of people who talk about best practices, but we don't really talk about unraveling things afterwards and doing the detective work and really trying to figure out what's going on. And your case is such a unique one. So walk us through how you even figured it out.
Okay, well, first off, when it happened, it was just something that was my own stupidity. I clicked on a link and I realized after the fact it was a bad link. So there's been a few other people before me that have been hacked. And, the first thing I thought was revoke.io. Yeah, revoke.cash. I'm sorry. So I went there and I started scrolling through. And the first thing that I'm thinking of is trying to find or at that time, I don't think that site had the ability to search by most recent, where now it does. So you had to scroll through, and I have, so many different NFTs, and there's so many different, approvals that I was scrolling, thinking which one was it that I clicked on. And I came to the conclusion, I'm pretty sure which one it was. So I revoked that. And what I did was I contacted a few people that I knew that were recently hacked. And I said, hey, listen, I was hacked. However, I didn't think that my wallet was compromised. I thought that somehow they just were able to make one transaction, which ended up turning out to be that was the case. Now, the one thing I do want to say is I had help with this from Simona, who she's an artist, NFT artist from Italy. I'll try to find a post by her, but she was like a godsend that came down from the heavens to help me out with this. And she basically immediately was like, okay, give me your address, you know, which wallets got hacked, da da da. I sent her the info, and she was able to come to the conclusion. She goes, your wallets are not compromised. However, to be safe, this is the protocol that you should go through. And she was telling me to start revoking all the different things. And, you know, I followed everything that she said. And, you know, luckily, I wasn't compromised entirely, as in, you know, if my seed phrase was given up or something like that. So I just clicked the malicious link that gave this hacker this ability to exploit my wallet and make a transaction where, you know, if you know OpenSea and these other, you know, marketplaces, the most you could transfer on one transaction is 20. So they took their time going through, picking and choosing which NFTs that they wanted to pull from my wallet. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a good feeling. You know, I lost 17 from one artist alone. And that one artist is the only artist whose work has more than two pieces in my main NFT collection. He has like six or seven. So I have an entire wall of his work, Pascal Boyart, you know. But anyway, Simona was there to help me out. And she's the one that kind of gave me the procedures of what to go through. But, you know, just the one thing I do want to say is if SoulSafe or SafeSoul was around, I probably would have never clicked that link. And it's because it was a link that other people have clicked before me, because I now realize it was around for a week or so. So during that time frame, there would have been plenty of time for people to click, this is a bad link. So I would have never clicked it. And it's like, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, but woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know,
Right.
I wish
Right.
SafeSoul was around. Ah! But,
So,
you know, it is
Patty,
what it
you're
is.
hitting on what I think is one of the more interesting things that doesn't get talked about a lot. So your story is I clicked on a link, but there's another part of that story that's really important for people to understand, and that is time. The guys that set up that link were patient, and they just sat there and they waited because, again, they're harvesting victims, right? They're wanting more and more people to click on that before they pull the trigger and start emptying people's wallets or taking what they can. And I think that that's something that people need to be aware of. An attack isn't necessarily going to happen in the second that you click something. It might be something that happens weeks or even months or maybe even a year later on. And the more patient the attacker is, the more wallets they can steal from. So I think that's a key lesson in that. You know, as you're authorizing things and as you're approving things, understand that you need to go back and revoke it. And you need to be thinking of what are all the things that I've interacted with in a day? And did I give permissions that I need to go back a couple weeks later or even months later and try and remove, right? So based on that, then, have you changed? So you were already, I think you've been a champion for people doing the right thing, for being very secure. And I'm really curious, after you went through this personally, have you changed what your own protocol is?
I mean, of course, I've modified things. I mean, but I was, you know, I always said to myself, you know, I'm as careful as someone can be because I'm so anal with things where, you know, I'm hyper analytical with everything that I do. So when it comes to, you know, simply clicking a link, I make sure that I run through my, you know, checks to make sure. But yeah, and it's kind of hard to explain because everyone, no matter how careful you are, can at one point, you know, slip and make that mistake. And, you know, I didn't think for a second that I was invincible, but I knew that I was way more careful than most people. And I always thought there's always that chance. So, you know, my mindset now is continue to go through the same checks that I did previously with this additional knowledge of how to, you know, potentially prevent it in the future and what steps to immediately take following something like that happening. Because it's like, again, even if I'm still so careful, there's still that potential of screwing it up. But at least now I kind of know what to do to prevent, you know, a meltdown, because you know I understand the steps to follow afterward. But it's, you know,
So that's a really interesting topic we should maybe cover in a future spaces on how, what should you do? Like, what are the best practices to act the fact, like if you've been hacked? Because we hear lots of stories of sort of the nightmare of people trying to move their assets faster than people can drain them. But yeah, I'm interested in your checklist. So maybe that's a good topic for us to cover on another, another time. Is there, so one of the things that I always think is really interesting is, you know, we keep talking about trying to grow the space, you know, how do you add the next 100 million people into the space? I'm really curious if you've been doing this a long time. You've built up your protocol for how to be safe over years of doing crypto and then NFTs. And I'm curious if you think that there's anything that stands out that you think is too hard for people, or that we need to work on in order to get more people involved.
I don't. I think that, you know, if you take time to learn the proper steps, you know, you should have no issues. But again, there's always that chance. So the one thing I will say is there's a lot of people that are getting, well, not right now necessarily, but when the market starts to pick up, you know, crypto is weird because it's kind of its own weird asset where when things are slow, they're just so boring. And then when the market's crazy, it's so crazy. Everybody in the world jumps in and FOMOs in. So that's like part of the problem where people that have been in the market for a couple market cycles, they start to learn the processes of how to do things properly. But there's so much money that could be made in crypto so that every time the market goes crazy, all these people come in, have no idea what they're doing, and they all kind of do the same thing where it's like they just jump in and buy stuff. Where when I got into crypto, because of the background that I had in traditional finance, the first thing I studied was security. And I learned about what a hot wallet was, what a cold wallet was, and, you know, the differences between simple things like that, whereas most people almost don't even understand the difference, you know? And I think that that's the most important thing. It's, you know, first you got to understand what it is that you're going to be doing. But because during the last bull market, so many people were making so much money, people didn't even think to do that. They just, you know, jumped in. And then it's either they lost everything or they made a ton of money. They didn't take it out and then they ended up losing everything anyway. So it's like it was almost the same result. So a lot of the people that came into the market are gone. But of course, there's still the people that linger. And it's just experience, you know. That's pretty much the simple answer. But I do think that if people understand the security of, you know, moving your funds when you purchase something using one wallet, move it to another wallet where you have nothing connected to. These are things that are very important that if you're in the space long enough, you know, you kind of pick up on it. And if you understand that, you should be pretty protected 99.9% of the time. But there's always that outlier situation where something crazy happens, where with me, where it was like this delayed link that I clicked that redirected me to another page. And it was just like extensive. It wasn't a typical just click this link and, you know, you get hacked. It was more to that. So as far as I know.
Patty, one of the things I remember hearing you talk a lot about, or that I've seen you talk a lot about, so if you think of security just as trust, right? Like, who do you trust, right? It's what are you going to sign? What are you going to interact with? What are you going to buy? You know, do you trust your laptop to hold your secrets? No, you put them on a hardware wallet. You know, whatever it is, it's all about trust and convenience, right? So when one of the things that you talk about that I think is related to this is, where do you have your funds? Do you have them in a custodial account where someone else owns them, or do you have them in a wallet that you control, self-custodial, right? Can you talk a little bit about that? And if you see that there's any, I'm trying to draw a connection in terms of security, right? If it's your funds and you want to make sure that you have access to them, you need to hold on to them. Do you see it the same way?
Yes. I got into crypto for that purpose. I don't want to rely on anyone for anything. I hold myself accountable for things that I do. I will never, ever do something that's my fault, but it could have been prevented had I done things the right way and then blame someone else. There's nothing I hate more than when people do that. So I hold myself accountable. I want to hold my own funds. I understand if people want to use some sort of, you know, custodial service where, you know, you don't know the market that well, or you're, you know, holding money for someone else or whatever it may be. But everything that I do myself. And so, yes, I have an array of wallets. I use, you know, I've used 30 different types of wallets, you know, wallets that don't even exist anymore, wallets that most people probably never heard of. And these are wallets that were primarily Bitcoin wallets that became ERC-20 wallets. And this is from, you know, the 2017 market cycle. But yeah, definitely, I hold my own funds. I do everything myself. And I think for me personally, it would be no other way. Now, a lot of people aren't like me because, you know, I always say that I consider myself to be a lone wolf, where most of the stuff that I do my own research, and it's, you know, I don't take other people's advice. But that's because, you know, I've been in markets for 20 years, and I kind of feel that I have a grasp of what I'm doing. So I want to hold myself accountable, and I don't want to rely on someone else doing something that could potentially cause a mistake where my money gets lost. And that's it. You know, it's my money that's gone. So yes, I have multiple, you know, cold wallets. I've used the Trezor. I use Ledgers mostly. You know, I've got a, you know, I don't have the Ledger X. I've got a whole bunch of Ledger S's. And sure, the reason is just because if I put all my money on one ledger and I lost that one ledger, you know, you're in trouble. Whereas if you spread your money through 10 ledgers and you have them in different areas, then you've got your money distributed in 10 different locations so that if one of them's compromised, you still have 90%. So that's kind of what I have done, where if I am actively buying or selling something, I'll use my hot wallets. But once I say to myself, okay, this is going offline, I move it to a ledger. You know, I've got a Lipolol Titan, which is another air-gapped wallet. You know, it costs, you know, a little bit more than most wallets. But, you know, cold wallet, it's essential for somebody who's in crypto. And, you know, with NFTs, it's the same. I mean, I do have a lot of NFTs on hot wallets. And, you know, that's just kind of my preference because maybe it's my own stupidity. But, you know, it's just how I do things, I guess.
Patty, this has been really helpful. This is great. Thanks for sharing the story of what you know, what you had to deal with, and it sucks. But I think one of the great things is having someone who's such a well-known collector come on and just share the experience. You know what you're doing, and it's something that unfortunately happened to you as well. So it should be a good lesson for everybody that even if you're doing all the best things, you can still make a simple mistake. And hey, to your point, you know, links and things like this, this is the kind of thing that the community can lean into through a tool like PayPal. And hopefully we can reduce the number of people who are clicking on bad links by using a tool that can kind of harvest those links and highlight them right in the browser for people. Thank you. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Cindy, I'm gonna kick things back over to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Thank you so much, Buddy, for sharing this story. I think it's very important to talk about it, like, for people who have such a great experience, like a big experience in this space, and still became a victim of some scammers, hackers. This is crazy that people, like, the level of expertise does not guarantee you anything, actually. So I really love the point when you said about that you want to be responsible for your own actions. This is really what makes sense, because we can never blame anyone. Our digital life, like my screen time is something like 10 hours a day, or maybe even more. So it means that my digital life is almost a half of my life. So it means that my digital hygiene, or how to call it better, is the most important thing that I can do, because I have some digital assets, right? I have my digital life, I have my digital assets. And when we're speaking about cybersecurity, actually, it's a part of the digital security, because the story that Patty just shared is about losing some NFTs from the wallet because of clicking on some suspicious link. And unfortunately, there was no safe soul to highlight that. Hey, this is suspicious, be careful, please. But there are many cases when people do some mistakes connected to some digital activity, not crypto activity, but some digital activity that leads to...
I just wanted to say one last thing about, you know, the whole situation that happened with
me.
And I, you know, it totally comes off as a plug for the whole concept of SafeSol, but The reality is, it probably would have been prevented if SafeSol existed. And the reason I say this is because the link that I clicked, which I found out was the link that was bad, because it existed for, like I say, over a week. And I don't know how many people got scammed by the same link, but it was a link for Tyler Hobbs's Fidenzas. And if anybody knows what a Fidenza is, it's an NFT of a collection that's got 999, and the floor is like 70 ETH or something. I don't know. It was over 100. It was, you know, as low as 50. But the point is, I just, for some weird reason, thought that, okay, I'm going to click this. And I did. And it brought me to another page where I clicked another link. But that's not the point. The point is, that link existed on Twitter for over a week. And with the concept of how SafeSol works, there would have been people that, in my mind, 100% would have acknowledged that link was false. So that when I hovered over it, I feel that I would have got the notification that I needed not to click it. And again, I know it comes, like, everybody knows, you know, I'm a big fan of digital animals. I think Igor's a genius, and SafeSol, I think, is incredible. But it's like, it's the truth. And if I didn't have, or if SafeSol existed, I think I would have got that pop-up and checked myself, because like Tyler Hobbs is not going to freaking mint another Fidenza collection. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. And so it's my own stupidity, again, my own fault. But if that warning popped up, I would have questioned what I was doing and slapped myself in the face, and I would have never clicked it. And I feel certain of it. And sorry for, you know, cutting you off, but I wanted to try to get that in real quick before, you know, I finished everything up. So thanks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is ridiculous. Like, the link was seen by so many people. And you remember this Beeple hacks case, like last year, when he shared some suspicious tweet saying that, hey, I have a collaboration with some brand. I don't remember the details, but it was in this way. So, and so many people saw it, right? But there was no place to report. And yes, this is what I love about SafeSol. It's one of my favorite parts, that you can report if you see that, if you're not sure that you like that you see something is trustworthy or not trustworthy, you can report and ask people to come and check and to help you. And this makes your digital experience like you are not alone, that there are people who can come and help you and check with you. And yes, as I said, it's very important to understand that we are all responsible for our own actions. And this is, yes, this is the truth. But okay, it's very cool to be part of the community and to have some people to cover your back, right? To say that, yeah, we can come and check. We can like decide together what's going on here. And if you see that there are some other people who agree with you that this is suspicious, this is, yes, this is the point. Like, when one person think that this is suspicious, it's okay. But when there are 2, 3, 4, 100 people saying that, yes, this is suspicious, that makes sense. And that makes it much more powerful. The whole, yeah, Otto, you wanted to say something, right?
No, I was just going to agree with what you're saying. I think for me, the thing, you know, there's no perfect security system. It's not a thing that exists. Every computer system that humans have ever created, every single one of them, we figured out how to hack all of them. Every single one of them. Okay, that's the first thing you have to understand about security. One, it's always a trade-off, and two, there's no such thing as a perfect system. So when you think about, well, how do you build behaviors that put you in the best possible position to make a good set of decisions and not put yourself in dangerous situations? What you want is a tool that's going to be constantly sort of tickling your brain, going like, hey, is this safe? Hey, is this right? Hey, is this thing? And so having an active database where the community is feeding things in, to me, sort of checks a lot of those boxes, right? So, I mean, anyone who's been using the, anyone who's been in the beta program for, is a digital animal holder, whether you're in the first beta or the second beta, when they shut off the first beta, I was like, oh no, crap. Because I was so used to seeing the little green boxes around people, like, that I started getting worried when they disappeared. I was like, oh, like, Rick's profile doesn't have a little green box anymore. Like, oh, something's wrong. And it was like, oh no, they just shut off the beta, so it's not working anymore. So that right there tells you there's something interesting going on, right? If you're used to seeing these annotated profiles on on Twitter, or if you're used to seeing annotated results in Google, when you don't see them, it's like, oh, yeah, maybe I'm going to look a little bit differently at this, right? And it's always an arms race, and so far the bad guys have been kicking our butts, but, you know, this is maybe one thing that we can look at that can maybe help. It doesn't solve every case, it doesn't solve every problem, but it's also not trying to. It's just trying to solve a certain kind of